Blog Talk Radio.
Can't call it, man. Good morning to you.
Hey, man. Good morning to you. It's a wet one over here on the East Coast, so we're dealing with it. Looks like the temperature's about to heat up in a couple of days and get to some semblance of normalcy. We will take it as we get it. Cuzzo, I spoke last week about our meeting down in Tejas and the excellent food that we had. The name of the spot that we went to again was, remind me.
It was So Natural Organic Restaurant and Market.
Okay, that's what's up. And that spot made television, right? It was on a favorite restaurant or some show.
Yeah, one of those shows, man. That you know, when a gentleman goes around and you know, restores restaurants and pretty much bring them to glory in a sense, man. It's a real nice show. You know, he finds restaurants that has a lot of potential. Kind of unique restaurants in a sense. Some of the restaurants are old school type mom and pops, and some of them are more, you know, new age restaurants. With this particular restaurant being a organic restaurant and market, he came on, restored the restaurant, and made it a real big part of the city in a sense.
That's what's up. Well, anyhow, it was a great meeting, great folks. Thank the family down there for their time and putting up with us as we cut up a little bit and acted a little bit foolish. Not too much, but just a little bit. We truly appreciate us being able to come in and do some business with you all. And we look forward to bigger and better things in the future. Today, we have a full week. The playoffs are going on. Egyptian Air, the plane crash that happened. Cuzzo, you wanted to focus on the selling of HBCUs, specifically in North Carolina, because there was some legislation introduced, not passed. Let's get that straight. Let's not throw folks all up in arms, but introduced. legislation introduced there recently that you want to focus on. But, you know, your man Trump is still making some headlines, and God willing, we won't get too much into that. But Oklahoma is making some headlines as well, and that ties into the Donald Trump piece. We've got to talk about that. It's getting hot. Hopefully, it will eventually catch up to the damn East Coast. But India set a record early in the week. We're going to talk about that briefly just because it's one of those interesting stories, so on and so forth. But we'll start at the start. We'll start at the beginning. In Carolina, legislation was introduced that, in essence, will cut deeply into the budgets for historically black colleges. HBCUs will refer to that moving forward. Tuzzo, what's up with that, man?
You know, this is something that I've been watching for years. You know, one of my dreams was to go to a HBCU, and, you know, because of the history behind it, it's a historically black college or universities. So with that title alone, I was always, you know, one. That was my dream. You know, in high school, I went down to Howard and had a tour and, you know, was fighting for a football scholarship / ROTC scholarship / student athlete scholarship, you know, and so that was one of my dreams. But it wasn't, even as a kid, going to a HBCU wasn't something that was projected as an attractive degree. It wasn't something that people heralded, and, you know, it was, you know, a big thing in the media. You didn't hear about, you know, Howards and Hamptons like you heard about the Harvards and Yales of our institutions. So, you know, as I got a little older, a little wiser, a little bit mature, I started, you know, paying attention to the reputations of the HBCUs. If you're not black, you really don't know much about HBCUs. And even then, if you're not conscious of it, you really don't know about HBCUs. There's a lot of black people who really don't know a lot of the HBCUs outside of Howard University. Or maybe, you know, if you're in North Carolina, you have, you know, North Carolina A&T and stuff like that. So, fast forward to now, you have this legislation that's been proposed to change the names of the HBCUs and also cut the cost per semester hour down to $500. It's jeopardizing the entire HBCU system. So looking at the article, looking at the legislation, I really feel that North Carolina, along with other states who have HBCUs, they feel like they're losing money. A big reason why they want to change the names and change the cost of tuition is because of the enrollment. Now, again, a big part of the decrease of enrollment is because when you look at a degree from HBCU, not a lot of people put a lot of weight behind it. You know, again, you don't hear them pumped up like Harvard, Yale, Johns Hopkins, even Towson State University. You know, they're not competing on those particular levels. Therefore, a lot of states see that there's not a use for HBCUs. But I think, like, you know, for us, it's our responsibility to make sure. I think Tom Joyner does a great job at representing HBCUs, advertising, promoting, trying to get people on board. But he's only one person trying to take care of a whole entire culture. And I think it's impossible for him to do. But when you have legislation like this, when it boils down to money, you're going to have a lot of people backing the legislation being passed than people backing the legislation being, you know, being abolished. And for me, I think it's a troubling sign that, again, another part of black history is threatened to be, first, it's been ignored for a long period of time, but it's also threatened to be just completely extinguished, wiped from the history books in the forgotten past. So I think it's a real big responsibility for people like us who do the radio shows and who have TV shows to really, you know, publicize and advertise. University of Phoenix get more play than Howard University. How is that? Why is that? Why is it that we don't have the advertisement, the marketing. You don't even have, you know, again, you don't have back in the day where guys used to rock the HBCU shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies and stuff like that. You don't have that anymore. So the pride isn't there anymore. We're not having people, we're not having alumni really pump up HBCUs outside of the communities. The recruiting is bad. They have a lot of things they need to do to secure the future of the HBCUs. And again, this legislation right here, I think, is just a start for more trouble to come for North Carolina, Maryland, Texas, you know, a lot of different places who have big HBCUs. And I really feel like in the next 10 years, we won't have any HBCUs anymore. There'll be community colleges with different names, and, you know, it won't be black anymore. It'll be, you know, everybody. Anybody can come, anybody can go. And again, it's not anybody can go to HBCU. You can be white, Hispanic, whatever. Anybody can go, but the history, the lineage, the legacy behind HBCUs will be never more. And for me, that's a troubling reality to look at.
To be more specific, we're talking about Senate Bill 873 in North Carolina. Now, the name of the bill is Access to Affordable College Education. Now, it aims to drastically decrease funding to six institutions in the state: Winston-Salem State University, UNC Pembroke, Fayetteville State, Elizabeth City State, University, and West Carolina University. Now, four of the five institutions are historically black colleges. The other one is a traditional. Now, the cuts are proposed, as you well said. The tuition is going to be $500 a semester for in-state students, $2,500 a semester for out-of-state students. That is on par, honestly, as you well stated there, with a community college. And it does put those institutions in play and in alignment with community colleges. Now, you as a student coming from out of state or even in state, as you said, you're now looking at this institution and saying, well, why the hell would I go to, let's say, North Carolina A&T or back to another institution within the state of Carolina? I think on another one that they really get named. I'll leave it. North Carolina Central. North Carolina Central. Why would I go to North Carolina Central when I could go to UNC or I can go to university or I could go to what's the school that Terry came out of? Because he played in Carolina too, but he didn't play it as major. He played it in this. Stephen Curry, what school did he go to?
Oh, he went to Davidson.
Huh?
Didn't you go to Davidson?
Davidson, absolutely, Davidson. You know, why do I do that when, you know, why should I go there when I can go to one of those? You know what I'm saying? Like, that makes no damn sense to me. To be honest with you, it makes no sense to me either. Now, at a certain level, you realize and understand that, in all honesty, it does not matter where you get your bachelor's degree from. It matters that you have a bachelor's degree. When you go to a master's degree now, that's when it starts to matter, because that's when you start really forging those connections as to long-standing relationships and where your career path is truly going to go and take. Now, not to discredit anything from HBCU, because you can do some great networking there as well, or any other university or college, because you can network well there. But for the most part, in all honesty, what matters is that you have a bachelor's degree. Where you get it from, it really doesn't matter, unless it's a personal preference and it really matters. I did not go to a historically black college. I went to a privately owned black college, Sojourner Douglas College here in Baltimore, and that's where I got my piece of paper. That being said, when you, as a student, a potential student, you're looking at these things, you're like, why do I go there? Okay, so you go there. Let's just say you go to the HBCU. You get there, and now because of the cut in money that the tuition is bringing in, now the school has less money, the state funds less. So now the school says, well, we have to cut some programs. So we may take accounting out. So now you're at a school that doesn't have any, a for real or a truly sustained business department. Then you now, but you're in a different part of business. You're like, that might not look too well later on down the line when I start applying for jobs, so on and so forth. So you look to go somewhere else. Or if you're an incoming student, you're like, well, hell, I'm going to Texas County. I can't go there now. I need to go somewhere else. So now you have less enrollment. Less enrollment means we need closure. If you get to the point where the revenues aren't coming in because the enrollment is low, you go to closure. I mean, that's how shit rolls downhill. That's what happens. You know, and in all honesty, this did not start in Carolina. And I've said
this in the past.
You know, this started with President Obama. In all honesty, you know, as one of his biggest supporters, I have to be one of his biggest critics as well. And to criticize him, back in 2009, his initial budget cut a $85 million direct DU fund that the Bush administration had put in place. Now, that fund had been running for 2 years when President Obama came in, again, because it was in the middle of the recession. He cut it out. Like, yo, we got to get rid of this. Now, the administration played it off, and they said, okay, well, we're going to cut you this 85 off the top, but we're going to increase the Title III money that we give you. The Title III money is the money that the government sets aside to actually contribute to HBCUs. So the spending went from $238 million to $250 million. That was a $12 million gain, right? But still, we're down 70. We're down $73 million. So he says, the president says in the budget, okay, well, we're going to increase the Pell Grant limit, because that's how a lot of community colleges and HBCUs and or non-traditional colleges, period, that's how they get their money. They really make their money off of the federal government offers to students who really can't afford to pay for schools themselves, but they can afford getting a Pell Grant through the government. So they increase that. But still, with all this going on, $73 million still wasn't made up for. Now, in this budget, and I remember this happening, by the way, I remember it on CNN. I saw there's a Republican senator from Carolina, and he spoke, and he was like, I don't understand why this money is being cut, yet the president still found a way to keep $9 million in the budget for the Whaling Industry History Museum. Now, what's more important? The education of our future leaders, or a museum that commemorates the whaling industry? Honestly, I don't understand where this guy's priorities are. I remember him saying that on CNN, without a doubt. Clear as freaking day. Now, in the current budget, carries an unprecedented increase to HBCU, the direct support through Title III, America's College Promise, which is in the budget, carries close to $60 million in support to HBCUs, and the return of summer Pell grants. Now, if you don't have a kid in school, if you are not going to school recently, or you haven't gone to school, you don't understand what that means. But a lot of kids and adults don't have the money, are not allowed to go to school all year long or for more semesters throughout the year, because there are no Pell Grants available for the summer and winter semester. So, you know, you have to take your classes in the spring and the fall. That's it. You can't go for the summer and or the winter. So now there's a proposal in the budget now, if passed, that summer Pell Grants will come back in play, which is a great thing. Now kids aren't sitting at home as long after they finish high school to go into college. Now, there were some other things that happened or have happened since the administration. 2 years later, in 2011, as we all remember, we all recall, most of us celebrated before we understood what it actually freaking meant, that the Department of Education came in and said, we're going to take the loan structuring. We're going to take that from these private firms, right? Banks and all that. Y'all got to go. You got to go. You're ripping people off. Now, there was some good and there was some bad to that. The good to that was you got a better interest rate. You got it from the government. You were better off in the long and the short run. The bad part, you got screwed in the short run. If you were in the category that a lot of minorities find themselves in, and even older people now, because of the economy was so short and so taken under by Bush's policies and previous president's policies, in addition to he, but we will carry on. We will not get on Bush today. Because your credit worthiness was not at the level that the government now set, you could no longer get along. Dig? So once again, here you are being screwed. Now, when private entities held that right or that string on the money for loans, they gave anybody and everybody real loan. It was a subprime business. We're going to give you the money because we want you to get that degree so we can take your money forever moving forward. Now, they were going to screw you with an outlandish rate, interest rate. They were going to screw you because they, you know, that lump sum of money, that 20 grand would potentially turn into 80 grand or 120 grand. In 7 years, because the interest rate was just so damn high, and they only required you to pay, you know, $75 a month, $50 a month, whatever, in order to make your quote unquote payments. So again, that never went to the principal. All of that money that you contributed simply went to the interest. So you would be paying your student loans freaking forever. And if anybody knows about student loans, you know about this without a doubt. Now, this, I don't think, was a directly, ignorant act or belligerent act towards students at non-traditional HBCUs, but it was an ignorance act. You know what I'm saying? It still impacted these students and these families heavily. And case in point, in the year 2013, there were 200,000 rejections for loans. In the year 2014, there were 400,000 rejections for loans, these were over what had been done previously when these monies, again, were controlled by private folks. Now, the Parent Plus loan, which is the program that allows parents to take loans out for their children's education, is the umbrella that all of this fell into. And though the rules changed and a lot of people were hurt, the administration did it when it realized what it had done. It righted the ship. It got new guidelines out there. And eventually 98% of the students who applied were approved for money and they got back onto it. But now the next hurdle between the administration versus the college, non-traditional colleges, is the administration wants to maintain a graduation rate that's on par or in line with, as you said, Cuzzo, a Towson University, a University of Phoenix, a Caltech, a MIT, so on and so forth, which states that, for the most part, students will graduate in 6 years. You dig? Depending on what program you're in, it might take you a little longer. We expect you to at some point flake out a little bit, only take 2 courses, so on and so forth. So we give you the 6-year window in order to graduate students. Well, non-traditional colleges, HBCUs specifically, they don't have that luxury all the time because kids are so undereducated coming into their system that they then have to go back, well, you know, have had to take remedial reading, have had to take remedial math before they can break into math, can break into English 1, Lit 1, whatever. You know what I'm saying? These are the things faced by historically by colleges and universities that the majority of these other institutions don't have to deal with. That's a huge problem because it's really not apples to apples. It should be apples to apples, but we live in America, people. We know how the system works, and the system is not geared toward educating those folks who live in rural or inner cities. Not. It doesn't happen. This is the reason that Carroll County here in Maryland is having the fight of its life right now because it's forced to shut down because no fucking body lives in Carroll County. Nobody lives out there. It's a whole bunch of white folks who are running away from the black folks who have now moved in or out of Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, Howard County, Prince George's County. So all the white folks are running out to Carroll County. But guess what? Not enough of them. It's way too much damn land out there and not enough people. So the tax base isn't there. No taxes, no school. The kids don't want to live there. They're moving into the city. They don't want to live out there. They're moving into the city. They're moving into D.C. They're moving into Baltimore. They're moving into Philadelphia. They want to move in the city. They want to move into places where they can park their car, walk to work, walk to the Starbucks, walk to the library, walk to whatever they want to walk to. They can Uber. That's where they want to live. Their parents just want to live the hell out there. This is the dichotomy that we're stuck in now in America. This is what we're going through, and we will continue to go through this, not only on a national, I'm sorry, a local level, as in the case of Carroll County, but also the national level. We need to continuously fund our historically black colleges and universities, point blank, period. They serve a purpose.
Yeah.
In an age of time.
No, and that was one of my biggest points about, you know, the history or the state of the HBCU. You know, this thing right here, starting with North Carolina, is not just going to stop with North Carolina. This is a ball that's going to roll downhill, and it's going to bounce from state to state, you know, from east to west, north to south. And like you just pointed out, in regards to Towsend and other universities, that relationship, that connection to the city, that connection to the urban education isn't there. You know, so you already, you know, if you're a city-educated kid, you're already not prepared to go to a Towsend University. You're already not prepared to go to a Johns Hopkins University. So where do you go after that? You go to BCCC. You go to a community college of Baltimore County. You go to Catonsville. You know, you go to an upstart and hope that you can do well enough to go to a HBCU or to go to, again, a Towsend University or Johns Hopkins or University of Maryland. And for me, that's the biggest problem. You know, the pipeline to from city education to a high institution of higher learning is weak. Is nowhere near as strong in the pipeline from school to prison. Yeah, that's a better pipeline for urban kids than, you know, going from high school to institutional higher learning. And for me, that's the problem. That's where we have to step in again and be mindful of the state of emergency, in a sense, for African-Americans in our education. More times than not, you have people who settle for being the first high school graduate in their family. You know, again, the pride, the prestige behind the HBCUs isn't there because the expectation is low also. But we have to be cognizant. We have to be mindful of where we are, who we are, and where we're trying to go. And it's not there anymore. And it's a sad state of affairs.
Very much so. You know, but in addition to all, as I was going to close out with, we're talking about a time in which our nationalism, our not patriotism, but our nationalism is yet again being tested. The worthiness of black folks in this society is yet again being tested. And it's being tested every time some black person is murdered by a police officer or a private individual. This fucking idiot, what's the boy name? Zimmerman sells the gun that he killed Trayvon Martin with on an online auction. Are you really? Someone bought that. Really? Okay. But anyhow,
it's a key thing. It's a part of history.
Happy birthday to Michael Brown. This would have been his birthday today had he lived. Would have been. I'm sorry. It was yesterday. Yesterday would have been. Had he lived, would have been his birthday. Happy belated birthday to Michael Brown. But when these things happen, the grand jury brings up charges against the federal grand jury brings up federal charges against the police officer who killed the young man in South Carolina. He also faces state charges. Is he going to jail? That's the damn question.
Been
here before. We've been here when charges have been brought, but no one goes to jail. Nobody goes to jail. How does that happen? How do you kill somebody? There's video evidence of you killing them, but you get to go home expressly with no recourse. I can't do that. I can't walk up to somebody and kill them and claim that I fear for my life and go home. It doesn't work that way. I can't do that. So this is not fair and equitable treatment. That's why we need institutions that focus on us uniquely, our unique needs, our desires, our community that help us understand better the world at large as we need to understand it. Those folks around us who will guide us through our tumultuous 20s, our late teens, our crazy 20s, and say, young man, young lady, this is what you need to do. You do not need to do that. You do not need to go this way. And let me show you, this is what you need in order to open that door that you're trying to get in. Because the professors, the deans, the other faculty and staff members, they've all been there. They've all been there. And they are gifts. They come back and give us the knowledge that we need, the understanding that we need, in order to get where we're trying to go. This is why we need these things. This is why it's important. No, we don't. There's no HBCU that rejects anybody that applies based on color, gender, ethnicity, national origin. That doesn't happen. Age, creed, doesn't happen. If you're white, you can go. Hey, remember during the Clinton years, white folks flooded HBCUs.
Yeah, they were diving in the HBCUs.
Why? Because they got to go for free. They were a minority at a minority.
They were a minority, yeah. They were diving into you know what? that was one event that was like, wow, this is really amazing. Like, you know, when you look at, you know, black culture and how, you know, how other races hold on to it, that was one that was kind of offensive to me, but then I really couldn't hate it because, you know, the rules allowed it, you know, the affirmative action rules allowed it. But it was just amazing to me to see a white person in a picture at Howard University. I had to, like, double take, like, is this real? Like, are these paid, you know, models or whatever? But it was
nope.
A real thing. Like, you know, white folks were going to HBCUs, and they were getting quality educations, and guess what? They were coming out and you know, making a name for themselves off of this education from HBCU.
Yep.
But...
Absolutely.
Now, but since then, that hype has kind of died down. Again, it was so cool in the mid-90s to represent an HBCU. Again, you had all the actors, actresses, comedians, whoever could be a part of the movement representing HBCUs. I remember back in the day, you know, you and boys that we grew up with rocking sweaters and, you know, sweatshirts and hats and stuff like that representing HBCUs.
Yep.
And I wanted to be a part of that as a kid.
I had about 6 vests.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to be a part of that as a kid. But what happened to that? That's the problem. You know, with African Americans, man, with black folks, what we tend to do is we make movements faddish. They're in play for a year or two. There's a lot of steam. You know, it's hot, heavy, it's gone. And like, you know, black. You know, when nobody's giving us that attention anymore, the movement fades away. You know, I made a comment before talking to a man named John Hope Bryant. And I was talking to him a few weeks ago, and I was saying that it shouldn't be faddish to be black. If you're proud to be black, you should be proud to be black 365, you know, through eternity, through your entire lifetime. You shouldn't be proud to be black only when we're in trouble. You know, this proposal right here for legislation in North Carolina should, you know, it should spark a movement. It should spark some anger. It should spark some protests and stuff like that. But it shouldn't just stop after the cameras, you know, leave you. When the cameras face away from you to Egyptian Airlines, which is going on right now, when the cameras turn to Donald Trump, which is going to happen again pretty soon, it shouldn't just stop there. You should get out there and promote your children to go to HBCUs. You should get out there and go to college tours to HBCUs. But that doesn't happen. How is it that kids in Baltimore City? Huh?
Look, I remember that, you know, as an adult now, obviously with adult children, I remember telling my son, actually, I don't know what school you want to go to, but I know where my money is going. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you want to follow the money, that's cool. If you don't, that's cool too. You know, I'm cool with it either way. And there was a pride in that. There was a greater level of understanding that education was a necessity. I think that we've come out of that because of the advent of technology. Everyone wants to be a star. There's only enough room for so many people to shine, and that's the God's honest truth. You know, there's only but so much room for enough people to shine. In the entertainment world, you can still be a star. You can be that star dermatologist, you can be that star civil engineer, you can be that star pharmacist, you can be that star physical trainer, you can be that star attorney. There are a lot of rooms for stars. But on that stage, on that basketball court, on that football field, on that baseball diamond, whatever, there are only but so many people that are going to fit.
Yeah.
Because no matter how good you are, you sound like this person. You sound like that person. You play like this person. You're not fast enough. You're not tall enough.
Yeah.
I was reading the article just yesterday, and we're going to move off of this because there's some other things to cover. I was reading the article just yesterday about the changes in the NBA draft rules. Now, if you're not aware, the changes now allow kids to declare for the draft, but as long as they don't hire an agent, they can
come back
to school all the way up to the point of the draft. They can, at the final day, they can say, you know what, I'm out. And the final day, I'm out. I'm withdrawing my name. I'm done. Whereas before, if they declared, and, you know, I don't remember exactly how it was written, but they had a very short window.
Yeah, it was like 3 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, to find out, to say I'm coming back or I'm stuck and I'm going. Now there was a kid, and it focused on this kid, and he's a good player. He's a very good player. But he declared for the draft. He went. He sat. He played. He went to the combine. He sat in front of some executives, some coaches, and they told him, "You're not ready." So he brought his ass back to school.
Mm-hmm.
But as the article stated, this is probably the first time in this kid's entire life that someone told him, "You're not good enough." So now, if he really wants to make that transition, he now has a guide to get him there. And he'll probably work harder. He'll probably work smarter on things that he never would have looked at before in order to realize his dream. He now has a real shot at realizing his dream. But he's
now, you know
been
what?
Like,
yeah, exactly. The thing I don't want people to get caught up in is, well, you know, the whole cliche, never let somebody, you know, tell you you can't, you know, accomplish your goals and don't let people, you know, stop following your dreams. He's continuing to follow his dream. But
yep.
he now has a real sense of where he stands as far as, you know, making the most of his dream. Yes, he definitely could have, you know, went through the whole entire draft process. He could have went undrafted, went to the NBDL, got a 10-day contract here and there, but he never would have fulfilled his dream to his full potential. Maybe. Right? But now he has the opportunity to say, you know what, okay, I do need to refine some things. Because what happens is when they go to these executives, they're telling them where you need to grow at. These are the tangibles that you're missing. We need you to refine your ball handling skills. You know, your work ethic is a little sketchy. We're not saying that you're not good enough as an athlete, but to be an NBA athlete, you need to refine these things before, you know, you want to get a serious look from NBA teams. And he can say, you know what, I appreciate that. Let me go take care of this. And he went back to school. That's a good thing.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely.
It's definitely good to see that work.
We need to move on. So in Oklahoma, abortion is now okay in OK. Mary Phelan, Republican governor, vetoed a bill that would have criminalized abortion throughout the state. Phelan is a possible running mate for Trump, or Donald Trump. You may have heard her name mentioned in those circles. Her comments on the bill is, "The bill is so ambiguous and so vague that doctors cannot be certain what medical circumstances did it necessary to preserve the life of the mother. Under the law, anyone found performing abortions, except in instances to save the life of the mother, would have been convicted of a felony and could serve up to 3 years in prison." Phelan, let's not get it twisted, is a anti-abortion rights governor. That is her stance. That is her position. That is her platform. She is a true Republican. However, now this is where it gets interesting. And I have to echo a cohort of mine, a coworker of mine, the Black Eagle, Joe Madison, when I say this and I say, follow the money. The threat of hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees from a near certain constitutional challenge would have eventually led to her veto. Why? Because Oklahoma is currently facing a budget crisis. Follow the money, people. People don't do shit because it's always the right thing. They do shit because they understand the money. She was not going to put the state through legal challenge after legal challenge, losing hundreds of thousands, potentially millions, depending on how long the challenges took and how long the proceedings went on through these lawsuits in order to prove herself and her party right. So she did the only thing that she could, which was, in this case, the right damn thing to do. She vetoed the law. Now, Trump has a $6 million lie. Now, we all recall earlier this year, sometime in January, he skipped out on one of the GOP debates. His premise behind that was, first off, it was his attitude that I'm in the lead, I don't need to debate these clowns because I'm winning and they're losing. And that is Donald Trump. Is he paid any attention to office? But the other part to raise money for veterans. So going out with this guy's that he's going to do this fundraiser in lieu of doing the debate, so that the veterans could receive benefits from it, right? His promise and pledge, he said on camera that they made $6 million. They had $6 million, $5 million, which was supposed to come from donors, and $1 million came from Trump himself. Corey Lewandowski told CNN on Friday that that figure was a little less than that. The money pledge didn't actually all come through. So the figures were closer to $4.5 million, as reported by the Washington Post on Friday. Now, from the jump, this thing seemed a little sketchy because the website, any benefiting charity, later on, it listed 27 veterans organizations who received a total of $2.9 million to date. Now, my math is not the greatest because, you know, I did go to one of those disclosure but probably on colleges. But I remember me saying just a couple seconds beforehand that they raised $4.5 million, but they only dished out $2.9. That leaves about $1.6 million just lingering around some damn where, and they have yet, they being the Trump camp, have yet to confirm when the other funds will be distributed. Now, the majority of the money, some digging, has come from Trump's foundation, then the foundation of two of his boys, Carl Eichen, he's a businessman, and Stuart Rare, he's a pharmaceutical billionaire. There has been no identification to those who pledged funds but didn't follow through, which to me is a call of bullshit. I don't think it ever happened. I think he lied. I think no one thought, I don't think he thought that people would dig that, have that money. Or he thought that he would just cover it. His thought process was he would cover it himself somewhere along the line, and it got away from him, and now he's dealing with the reality of everything you do and say is under a microscope. Don't be stupid. Which, in effect, is don't be you, right, cuz?
That's what it sounds like to me.
You know, today is
the Preakness?
No. What, is it the Preakness today?
Yeah, today the Preakness, man.
Today's
the Preakness, bro.
No, but it's, oh, man, you know, because it applies to the World War II veterans more than you and I, to be honest with you. It'll come soon. It's a Veterans Memorial Day. It'll come soon. It'll run across me. I got a whole lot cooking in the brain right now. No. But, you know, this is the time of the year that we're getting closer and closer to VE Day and VJ Day. I'm sorry, family.
Yeah.
That's Victory in Europe and Victory in Japan Day.
Japan.
So these celebrations will be more frequent. You'll hear more and more about the war in Japan and the war and the Great War in Europe. The war, we all know that WW1 was supposed to be the war to end all wars, but then WW2 came, so I guess that kind of wasn't right.
It kind of killed that whole idea, right?
Yeah, for real,
we're
going
to try this again, man. You know, it ain't worked the first time, so let's go ahead and do this thing over.
Yeah,
do
real.
Over.
What the hell are we thinking? I don't even understand. You know, that war to end all wars thing, I think we might need to do this just one more time to figure out what's going on.
While we laughing about it, man, I think what really happened was we saw the money that came from it. You know, I mean, I think this the practice that we have now is no different from what we had before. You know, yeah, war killed a lot of people, and you know, after every war, there you know, during and after every war, there was some you know sort of a recession, but the recovery in the past, the recovery was always great, and the people who funded the war gained a lot of money. The average citizens were hurt, you know what I'm saying? But the people in the middle of the war, they made bank. You know what I'm saying? So I think this practice that we have now, I mean, it started way back when. And the First World War was like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and kill this. It started off good. But just like with every good thing that America does, you know, eventually some greed come into play, and then we just got to take over and go overboard with stuff, man.
Hey, man, that's what we do. We fight.
That's the American way.
That is the American way. There's no
my
other
man,
way.
Nino Brown said that, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, it's Armed Forces Day. That's what it is, Armed Forces Day.
Oh, that's sure enough.
I knew it would come to me. It would come to me eventually. Today is Armed Forces Day. But, yeah, I mean, come on, family. We know this. War is great for the economy. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds ignorant. It sounds horrendous, but the fact of the matter is somebody has to die. If someone dies, somebody else gets a job. It's a great job stimulator. It's an economic stimulator because bullets have to be made, tanks have to be built, guns have to be built, things have to be shipped, things have to be packed, things have to be transported. Dude, it's a great economic stimulator. It sucks, but it's the damn truth.
Yeah.
It is absolutely the truth. Speaking on DJ Day, so President Obama is taking an international tour. He's going to Asia, and during his tour, he's going to go to Hiroshima. First sitting president to go to Hiroshima. Sorry,
he's a lot of firsts, man.
Yeah. First sitting president to go to Hiroshima. Yeah. So in a minute, he's the first in a minute to go. So that's going to happen next week. He's going on a 7-day trip. It's going to be the G7 summit. He's going over to do that whole thing. At Friday, just yesterday, a Secret Service agent shot a man that tried to break through a security checkpoint on E Street in D.C. The suspect he brandished a gun and refused verbal commands to stop. So he was shot in the abdomen, as reports said, transported to a local hospital with critical injuries. Vice President Biden was in the White House and found was secured. President Obama was away, as he has been on the move recently. So now, the thing that got me with this whole story was, first off, it didn't break really nationally, hard or heavy. That's sad. Like the norm.
They don't care.
That's something that break to the damn White House.
Yeah.
But also, that he was shot and he lived. Again, this shit confuses me because normally now we're hearing about people being shot and killed. So how does a Secret Service agent, who's a law enforcement official, manage to shoot a person brandishing a gun but not kill him? Baltimore PD, South Carolina State Trooper, Oregon State Trooper, Portland PD. Y'all need to take some damn lessons from this cat. It can be done. You don't have to shoot somebody and kill them. You can just shoot them and minimize the threat. Was it not the Secret Service agent in fear for his life? Things that make you think. Go ahead, Cuzzo.
Well, you know, I was watching. It's a good show, man. I love this dude, man. I hope that this show stays on. But Kamau Bell, 50 Shades of America. I'm watching this show every Sunday. Come on at, 10
o'clock?
You know
what? It's interesting that you brought that up. Because I tweeted him today trying to get him on the show.
No, that'd be a good look, man, because this dude, he's funny as hell. But he hits, you know, he's touching on everything that is American. I mean, it's good, bad, evil, whatever. He's in it, and he's taking it head on. So last week he actually went around with New York Police Department. No, Camden PD, and Camden, New Jersey PD, and they touched on, you know, how, you know, why these murders are why these murders are happening between police officers and citizens. And the actual police chief, you know, he was justifying it. Again, and I hate to hear the justification because, just like you said, just like you pointed out, these are Secret Service agents who are in charge of protecting the president, his family, and his staff. They managed to save a life at the same time, right?
Yep.
Now, this police officer in Camden, New Jersey, who's black, continued to justify the killing of citizens by not only saying, well, you don't understand the threat that we face, and yada, yada, but he also said that he always tell people, if you just listen to the officer's commands, you'll be okay. These officers, and this is on camera, this is on the heels of everything that's happened, so you've had time to really pay attention to what you're going to say on TV, how you come across, and how to politic it. This is not in a heat of the moment that type discussion. This is something that he had time to plan for, and he still managed to have the same mentality of, you don't understand what we go through, and if you just listen to the officer's commands, everything will be okay. Tell that same crap to these ladies who were raped and sexually harassed or sexually assaulted by the cop in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me that I'm supposed to follow the commands? Well, if I follow the commands, I stand to get raped if I'm a woman. If I follow the commands, then I stand to have all of my human rights violated. But I just need to follow the commands. But here it is, Secret Service, who have, in my opinion, a more vital position. Again, you're protecting the commander-in-chief, his family, and his staff. And they managed to do it the right way. Not shooting somebody 15 times in the back, unarmed.
Throw your taser. Throw your taser next to him.
Yeah, not doing that. They didn't do that. They shot this man who had a weapon, who clearly had some intent to do harm, and they managed to save his life and stop the threat. So definitely, they can take a page out of their book, or two, or three, or read the whole damn book. You know what I'm saying? And see how it can be done to stay out the headlines so you won't have to sit there and pump us with a whole bunch of rhetoric talking about if you just follow the rules or commands of the officers, everything will be okay. Because that's bull. But big ups to the Secret Service. You know, I think they should take over the police force altogether.
And, okay, well, we gotta do the biggest story as well. Biggest story of the week. Egypt Air Flight 804. Now, this went down Thursday morning. It's an Airbus A320. There were 66. Now, family, don't go crazy. Don't go crazy. There were 66 SOBs. Means souls on board. Do you know that? That is actually an old airline term that went away. It's now considered, if you're ever at the airport and you're waiting for your flight to leave, and a flight leaves before you and you listen to the agent at the desk, they'll say we have 66 guests. But it used to be 66 SOBs, souls on board, which is actually more respectful than the damn guest part. But some freaking body caught wind of what the agent was saying, filed a claim, filed a complaint against the airline, which made it to the FCC. They then found out that this was a standard term, so they filed a damn claim against everybody, a complaint against everybody, and everybody changed it for fear of a damn lawsuit. Thinking that it was derogatory, but it wasn't.
Sensitive American,
so,
man.
56 passengers, 7 crew members, and 3 security guards. 3 security officials on the plane, 66 souls on board, and that flight went down. The first call was terrorism. First call. I heard this, and I said to myself, this is ignorant. This is pure D fucking ignorant. But it's a way for these companies, these airline companies now, to deflect from their mistake.
Screw up,
because
yeah.
The first thing that comes out of their mouth, this had to be an act of terrorism. So instead of a lawyer to sue, they now rush to the government to say, you need to fight these terrorists more.
Oh, yeah.
And now it gives the airline industry more time to come up with a defense if it is in fact their fault than they would have had they just accepted responsibility from the jump. Again, follow the money, people. Follow the money. That's what these
people are doing.
Now,
definitely.
They're going to make these families, they're going to make these families prove that it wasn't terrorism so they cannot be held accountable, instead of them saying, yes, we fortunately had an electrical problem. It caused the plane to go down. Unfortunately, we had a fuel problem. It caused whatever. Pass the buck so it's not their fault.
But you know, anybody,
absolutely,
you know, watching this, anybody watching this can see, in my opinion, can see that it clearly not an act of terrorism. Their justification for saying it was an act of terrorism was that it swerved 90 degrees to the left and then swerved 360 degrees to the right before it went down. Therefore, it had the appearance of an act of terrorism. That's the justification behind the terrorism claim.
Okay.
How they got that from that, I have no idea outside of what you just said, which is follow the money, deflect it for as long as we can. We deflect it, buy some time, save some money, continue to make some money at the same time. Meanwhile, you know, these parents are going through hell, you know, again, I mean, these families are going through hell, you know, thinking it's terrorism. Oh, my God, we need to fight this, we need to fight this, we need to fight this, while we drum up a story or some kind of justification. Or fabricate a story, because they're probably going to fabricate some kind of story, because people are really afraid to fly now. I mean, planes, especially foreign, international flights, they're going down and having too many problems, you know, as of late over the last few years than the previous in years before. So there are some trouble. I mean, there is some trouble there. I don't know if it's the quality of the manufacturing. I don't know if it's the, you know, the quality of the pilots, but there's something going on in their QC that's not really making, that's not, you know, passing the test right now. And they're in trouble. So why not just say it's terrorism?
This just so happens as the French are in the process of putting in tighter security measures. So they're going through the argument of, are they going to increase security measures, so on and so forth, like other European countries, or are they not? This just so happens while folks are coming in to discuss the approval of funds to make this happen. Now, call me a conspiracy theorist if you but damn, that all just is coincidental at one time. Just really? Okay. Yeah.
But how dare you think
that
we're that evil? How dare you think that we're that evil to lose 66 souls on board to make $100 million?
Right, in a
or
week.
More. Yeah. How dare you think we do that? Yeah.
Now,
I've seen worse. You know what I'm saying?
In India, it's damn sure getting hot in here. The highest temperature ever recorded in India happened on Thursday. The town of Baladi in Rajasthan measured 51 degrees Celsius. Now, I'm not that damn smart either, so I had to Google it. That equates to 123.8 degrees Fahrenheit. This is the second day in a row that the town had reached a temperature of 120 degrees or greater. In 1956, the same city hit 123.1. 1956, dog. That was 60 years ago to ever recorded, according to Guinness Book of World Records, was 134 degrees on 10 July 36 in Death Valley. I'm sorry, 10 July 1913 in Death Valley, California. It reached 134 degrees. That's the highest temperature ever recorded, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. Now, the hip-hop portion of the show. Tupac's Hummer sold for over $300,000 the other day in auction. It sold for exactly $337,100. It was bought exactly 3 months before his death back in 1996. The Hummer H1 was customized by Fox. It had 10,101 original miles on it at time of sale. It was complete with a 12-disc Clarion sound system. Now, you know that's a back in the day joint. It had 12-disc, a Sony GPS, diamond plate bumper, external PA system with three sirens, and 360-degree spotlight.
Oh, wow.
We wish a happy birthday to Biggie. Today is Biggie's birthday. Puffy and them kicked off the Bad Boy reunion tour last night at the Barclays Center. Rocked it out for Big. The tour is nationwide. It's probably coming to a city near you. You get your tickets because they're going to sell like hotcakes without a doubt. I know people that were just hopping on them. Hopping on them mugs. They went on sale here yesterday at 10 o'clock. And they were selling
and they're cheaper than Beyonce's tickets.
Oh, hell of a lot cheaper than Beyonce's tickets.
I'm just saying. Yeah, well, she was going for a buck 40?
I was looking at floor seats, and the floor seats were running, put the charges and all that, like 200. Right around 200. That's cheap.
Yeah.
For who's on that tour, that's cheap. I'm not even going to lie. I mean, you got The Lock, you got Lil' Kim, you have Diddy, French Montana, I don't know why they included his ass, but, French Montana. Who else we got? I hope they bring Craig Matt, Mace, Total. Yeah, that's cheap for that tour. I ain't even going to bluff on that one. That's mad cheap for that. So.
Yeah, but like you said, that's floor seats, though. You know what I mean? That's a bargain. You know, I ain't gonna say a bargain, but that's a good price for floor seats. You know, you talking about Beyonce tickets pretty much starting at 120, 140 starting. Yeah. Like that's crazy.
Right. Oh wow. There was some nosebleed tickets for like 60. Yeah. So it's not my thing. There's no one there that I really want to see. I can live without seeing them, so I was like, I ain't going. Besides, I'm going to the Capitol Jazz Fest in 2 weeks, and then the Soul Spirit Fest. So I'm like, I'm good on that. I'll probably be concerted out after all those. But I'm keeping it real, shit. One of the listeners from Atlanta just signed me. She said she bought her Bad Boy tickets on Thursday. You go, girl. You go, girl. That's what I know. One of my coworkers, he bought his yesterday, and actually, I reminded him. He was like, "Dog, I'm glad you reminded me." He's like, "I got so damn busy, almost forgot." So he bought his as we were talking and stuff. But the playoffs are going on right now. Cleveland is crushing it. They are 10-0 in the NBA playoffs. Yo, that's almost unheard of. That is just, and they are playing with such ease that it's scary. It really is scary because
not really, man.
LeBron, Kyrie, and Love have been rested so much that by the time the finals hit, whomever they play is going to be a problem. And I say that because the bench is giving and getting quality minutes right now. So these dudes are playing with the confidence that we can play anybody and win. That's hella scary. You know what I'm saying? Golden State versus OKC, tied up 1-1. Obviously, Cleveland and Toronto is 2-0. Cleveland and Toronto play against tonight. Golden State and OKC play on Sunday. So we'll see. We will definitely see. But OKC, damn sure came in the Golden State stole one from us.
I hear what everybody's saying about, you know, how they well rested and stuff like that because they sweep in all these series, right? But Golden State has only played, what, two more games than Cleveland has? So they're not far behind in the rest category. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That, you know, that that Cleveland has. So I don't want to overreact to the rest because this is the playoffs. These are the defending national champions that they're probably going to face, you know, or, you know, an Oklahoma City team who has a deep bench also, and who I think both teams in Oklahoma City and Golden State matches up, you know, better than any team in the East that's faced Cleveland. Like, I mean, it hasn't, in a sense, it hasn't really, I'm not going to say it hasn't been fair, but they haven't really had a challenge in the East. You know, that's been the makeup of the East for the last 10 to 15 years. The East has been really weak. So, fortunately for LeBron, whatever team he's on has been the favorite, and they've proven to be the favorite because they've built around, you know, having LeBron James there. Starting when he went to Miami. When he was in Miami, you know, they learned that formula and they did the same thing back in Cleveland. But again, if you really want to go to it, it actually started with a big three in Boston. When they created their big three, people adopted that formula and saw that it worked and they wanted to do it everywhere else with LeBron James. But you still are facing the defending national champions or a star-studded Oklahoma City team who, if they act right and they play it together as a team, then they could probably dominate and kill Cleveland, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Toronto has a young team who in both games they did the same thing. It came out banging the first quarter, you know, the beginning of the second quarter they came out swinging, then they just gave up. Like, it's not, I don't think it's Cleveland suffocating it and just manhandling any of these teams. I think it's a lot. I think it has a lot to do with these teams not responding well and not punching Cleveland like they should.
Yeah.
But I know we got to wrap up, man.
I don't think that they are not defeatable. I'm just concerned that the way they're playing right now, they're really clicking well. The chemistry is finally developed. Lou has them fine-tuned. I'm optimistic for this. We do need to wrap. Family, next week we'll be at it again. The first weekend in June, we have a special guest joining us. So more details will be coming about that. She's already confirmed, though, so definitely see her. As I've been waiting, Sister Lisa Comet will be joining us on the 4th of June. That is also the Saturday of the Capital Jazz Festival. So we will be broadcasting live from that. So excuse all the rah-rah and la-la, but we must be amongst the people in order to continue to promote what we do all the time. It's also a good let our hair down. So that's what we do. But next week, too, is Labor Day. For all of those who are traveling, we will not. For all those who are traveling, please be safe. Going to and getting from your destination. We will be with you on Saturday, as we are this Saturday and almost every other Saturday. Let's be real, everyone. And we need a break as well. But almost every other Saturday. Until then, thank you for joining us, be it live or on Memrec, and we look forward to you seeing us on the radio next week. Peace!
Yeah.